Hello, and welcome to the Musical Minds podcast, where it is our job to flesh out the mindset and ways to cope with the struggles that ensue in becoming a high-performing musician. Hosted by Eric Reinhardt and Jake Pietroniro. Now let's get on to the show. Okay, so we're live with the Musical Minds podcast, and I'm sitting here with Zach, who I met through the Bay Area Piano Enthusiasts meetup group, and there was a lot of things he played last Sunday, and so welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And so there's just like a lots of questions / things and that I hope to learn from you, or just kind of like get into the meta of what's going on in your head. I kind of nerd out on that kind of stuff. Can you refresh my memory what song you played? It was like Piano Sonata by Chopin.
So I played the first movement of Chopin's B minor sonata. It's the Allegro Maestoso movement.
Okay. I'm trying to, do you remember like the time period in his life that he wrote that?
He wrote it towards the end of his life, or at least in the latter part of his life. It wasn't okay. Really like, the second sonata is famous for the funeral march movement, but I don't think in the reading I've done about the third sonata, I haven't read about any like major life events or world events that had greatly influenced his writing of the piece. Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Because Dan just didn't do that for you. He did that for the other two pianists. And I that's the first time that I'd actually ever heard that piano sonata. And what was so funny to me is like it was so Chopin-esque, like there was just like these stylistic things that he did where it's just like, yeah, this is I haven't heard the song, but I know that this is written by Chopin because he has these like graceful way of doing things or little trills or I don't know. So maybe I'll just start with what the things that I noticed and then kind of things that I noticed about your playing and then we'll go from there.
Sure.
So like you went on after intermission and like I watched, you were just like casually talking with Dan before you went on. And from the very first note, I felt like this just deep level of presence or like I'm starting, like it didn't seem like there was like much warm up for you. Is that what you felt as well?
It's definitely what I strive for. I definitely warmed up beforehand, before I tried out the piano, before the masterclass began. And I was definitely very nervous sitting there through the first two performers. Listening to other people play and realizing that it's not going to be that scary did sort of settle me down. And I was able to settle down pretty quickly. This is a great piece for sitting down and performing because it has this very bold opening that really just like grabs you right away. And the first couple phrases are really easy to be dramatic, and I mean it's maestoso without anything too scary. I think the ultimate example of the perfect performer's pieces is Rock 2, because it starts out with these big bold chords, right? And then the piano is hidden during a lot of passage work while the orchestra plays this beautiful melody on top of it. This is the B minor sonata isn't quite like that, but definitely the opening passage is one that will help you get over your nerves a little bit until the bottom of the first page when there's a series of descending fourths that is quite difficult to play. But at least the first couple measures, it really grounds you to play that.
Yeah. It was just like, I definitely noticed that it was like, I'm here,
right.
Which I thought that you achieved really well. Let's see. I also, I think what you achieved really well was that you had this ebb and flow and tempo, or just like very expressive playing. I guess this ties into the brief words that we were able to like speak to each other at the end, but you said that like Chopin really isn't your forte, or you feel pretty uncomfortable playing. Is it because it's like that overly expressive style compared to more Baroque music, which is kind of more tempered and less of the heart, I guess?
No, it's not that part of it. I love the super expressive, super dramatic sort of quintessential romantic music. I love playing Schumann and Brahms. I've been playing the Berg Sonata a lot recently, which is it was written in 1906, which is fairly early, but it's pretty. Berg was part of the second Viennese school with Schoenberg and Webern that invented the 12-tone system.
Okay.
So it's very forward-looking, but I love that piece because it has this sort of romantic flair to it. It incidentally happens to be centered around the key of B minor as well. But I've been accused of playing my Bach too romantically and my Beethoven too romantically. So it's not that part of it. I think I've never really felt like I could bring anything extra to Chopin, anything new to it. I felt like when I played a Bach Prelude and Fugue, I could bring out some voices that you don't usually hear, or when I play, I don't know, something more modern, maybe Ligeti or something like that, you can do something to try to connect with the listener more that they wouldn't have been able to otherwise. But with Chopin, a lot of people tend to play Chopin really beautifully. The expressiveness, I think actually, especially speakers of tonal languages play Chopin really well, because Chopin has all of these little ornaments and is very singing and expressive, especially these singing lines that are maybe have too great a range to actually be sung.
In Nocturne E flat major.
Right, but he's very inspired by the sort of vocal music. Actually, Georg Olsen has a great lecture where he touches on some of this.
Have you seen him live?
I have not.
I went on my birthday last year to Georg Olsen. He played in this church in Napa.
Oh, what was he playing?
I think it was Scherzo in E minor, and then he played like a Chopin ballade.
Okay, so he played Chopin. His Chopin is incredible.
He was like recorded all of it or something.
Yeah. But I never felt like there was much I could add to it. And I also felt like it was a lot of Chopin was exposed technically, not quite to the extent of Mozart, but it to an extent that I wasn't entirely comfortable playing the bigger pieces. I actually hadn't played Chopin since high school over 10 years ago. and it had focused on mostly other things where I felt like I could bring more to the music. The B minor sonata, I think, is more up my alley as far as Chopin goes. I felt like there's counterpoint to it. There's a difficult structure that you can really work with to try to make the various sections flow together. There is, of course, a beautiful second theme that sort of melts the heart if it's played right, and a beautiful third movement, a really incredible movement, and a sort of ridiculously virtuosic fourth movement that's extremely fun to listen to, and one day will be very fun to play as well. But that's why I chose this particular Chopin. I felt like I could sort of speak through it. Whereas a lot of Chopin, I feel like I haven't quite found what I can offer to it yet. I feel a little guilty that I haven't worked more through the mazurkas, which are his most personal works. And I think could
by
reveal.
By personal, what do you mean? Like that he liked them the most, or?
Yeah, they were. They were probably, they're sort of like his diary almost. They were most tied to his life and to his upbringing. In a way, like he wrote lots of other great dances, he wrote waltzes and polonaises. But I think the mazurkas were the ones that really most came from the heart for him. And so I do feel guilty for not working through more of those before tackling a big piece like the B minor sonata. But that's probably where I would go next.
Okay, I actually don't know that much about the mazurkas, and I'm reading one of his biographies right now because Chopin's my favorite. Though I don't know if I necessarily mentally approach it the same way as you do, like feeling like you want to have this unique flavor to your playing, which I think because you're more experienced, I think that you're able to figure that out. Have you read the Adam? I think it's Adam Nozalske, version of the Chopin biography, or no?
No.
Oh, okay. It's humorous and kind of interesting to read about this guy who I've been kind of like pedestaling for like the past 2 years, only to realize like he's not exactly the role model that I probably wanted him to be.
I mean, nobody is once you start to dig in.
Yeah, but like he's just really has a hard time relating to other people, and like his music is beautiful, but like he spends a lot of his letters and stuff when he's talking to like his friend Titus just complaining and basically saying like, oh, life sucks and like what's the point of living, and it's like not exactly the qualities that I want to like adopt, but I just want to take his stylistic.
I mean, even in classical music, the sort of brooding artist was the sort of the archetype. If you look at all of the great composers, they all had a darkness to them, from Mozart to Beethoven to Brahms.
Have you been playing since like a child?
Yeah,
like,
I have.
Like piano lessons starting at like the age of 8 or something like that, and
something like that,
and work like, basically taking lessons all the way through.
Yeah, I took lessons through college, and I got out of college, and I didn't have a piano, so I stopped playing for maybe a year or two, and then I missed it, and got back into it.
Okay, nice. Just because, and then you do software of some sort. You're in tech.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
because you're in Silicon Valley. So, So it's a good guess. Actually, it's really funny. So I think the first event that I went to was the flower piano event last year. And the first thing that this random person said to me was like, "Are you a software developer? Are you in software?" And I was like, "No." just because I think almost the entire group is in software. Do you think that's notorious that software engineers also need to like be musicians, or is it just because we're geographically like in the epicenter of tech?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a little of everything. If you look at the I don't know, say the Clyburn Amateur Competitions, you see a lot of software engineers. You also see a lot of doctors. In general, like much has been written about the relationship between math and music, and software engineering and computer science is very tied to math. So I think that makes sense. I also think there's the like almost stereotypical demographic that ends up in computer science, is the type of demographic that grew up playing classical music, and their parents made them, and then they ended up going to the universities and studying computer science, and then they ended up at the Facebooks and Googles of the world and in Silicon Valley. Yeah. It's also a job that has a fair amount of flexibility to it, in that you can work from wherever, and the culture, at least Silicon Valley, is very much one that the priority is getting your work done, and aside from that, like everything else is secondary. So I think it sort of does it does sort of encourage these sort of extracurricular pursuits.
Nice. Yeah. I was gonna like, do you currently work about a 40-hour work week? Yeah. I gotta imagine that's gonna be really hard for practice, like with willpower and
I mean, you do what you can. For a while, I was commuting from San Francisco, and I would get home and I would want to play the piano, but it would be very hard to get myself to sit down and do conscientious practicing. Since I've moved down, I felt more like when I got home, I have the time to play hands separately with a metronome and that kind of thing. Because that's really what I mean, all else being equal, you should practice versus not practicing, but deliberate practicing is clearly better than just playing through your music.
Yeah, definitely. That's part of the reason why I've like set up my life the way it is. It's just like I have a lot of free time in the midday to be able to practice, 'cause I don't think that I couldn't imagine trying to work a full-time job that is so cerebral and so mentally exhausting, and then come home and then like really try and make some good progress on piano.
Yeah, I mean, you do what you can. Some nights you don't get to play at all, and then sometimes on weekends you can make up for it. And that's sort of what it is.
I've always been so tempted to so I got a degree in biochemistry and was always like curious about computer science. And was like kind somewhat looking into like coding schools, I think last year, and just knowing the time investment that goes into these things. Like you can only be good at so many things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so since then I chose piano and and like that's what I do most of, like spend most of my time thinking about. And so
That's
it's interesting kind of it's interesting going to the group where most, actually, I don't think anybody that I've talked to makes it their full-time thing.
Few Juilliard grads can make it their full-time thing.
Yeah. Well, at least playing the piano. I mean, like, my teaching is almost like completely full.
Right. Which is inspiring to me, by the way. I could see myself my next ninja career doing something like that.
And it like dawned on me when I was actually starting to like get more into teaching last fall. And I was just like, I was so confused because there are so many more pianists in this piano group that are like way better than me. And yet they feel like they probably couldn't teach, but like, you know, more than you do, than you think you do. I don't know. It's just like, it's really, really interesting. And then again, I started really late. I was into other instruments throughout high school and like did mm-hmm. other private lessons for different instruments. So like, and then I fooled around with it in school. Mm-hmm. Then when I moved home, and it's been like 2 years ago, mm-hmm. That I play every day, maybe 2 to 3 hours of practice. And then like I prefer, it's like all I think about now,
right.
For the past like 2 years.
Yeah.
And, I have this sense of like urgency of like, oh, I need to get better. Like, I'm not as good as this person. And then mm-hmm. I have this conversation, with my piano teacher, like every week or every 2 weeks, mm-hmm. When I say like, when I talk about being impatient mm-hmm. about my progress. And then, it happened this week because I was telling him about all of the performers at the masterclass mm-hmm. and he's like, well, you do have to realize that these people probably have been playing since they were a child. And
there's always someone better. There'll always be Horowitz or Yuji Wang or whatever it may be.
Yeah. Those people are, crazy. like their accuracy is just like, it's insane.
Yeah, it is. And it's sort of interesting how over the years you've seen such technical mastery be taken almost for granted among the top performers. Like people still remark on the amazing technique of whoever it may be. But it's really taken for granted that you can play almost anything at a certain level. It's sort of incredible.
And at any tempo. They're like, oh yeah, pick a tempo and I'll play whatever section. like the mind is the there's a recording at Google of Lang Lang playing his Tristess etude. Mm-hmm. Or the Tristess etude, opus 10 number 3, and like there's the section with, it's like the sixths in both hands, and I don't know if you've learned it, but it's like it's just kind of like this mess of tritones that is really confusing to listen mm-hmm. to, but anyway, he just like breezes by it, and it's just like ridiculous because his hands are just like, but like I don't even know. And and he it's so weird to be, just the thought of being able to do something at any tempo, because that's so not what I'm able to do.
The thing is, these people are incredibly talented, but they also have dedicated their lives to it and work just as hard as, I mean, way harder than we do.
Yeah. Before this goes to pass, do you have a favorite pianist or a couple that you really admire their playing?
I mean, there are a lot of pianists that I admire. The one that's sort of been passed down to me that I've always looked up to is Willie Capel, who is my teacher's mm-hmm. idol. growing up.
How do you spell that?
His last name is K-A-P-A-E-L-L. He also has my favorite recording of the Chopin B minor sonata.
Okay.
He's known for really just like throwing himself into the music. He's not as well known anymore because he tragically died in a plane crash. I think he was like 31 or so. But he was supposed to be the next great pianist, and his recordings are incredible. I think his Pictures at an Exhibition is my favorite recording of that. His Bach is wonderful. His Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini, the Rachmaninoff, is perhaps my favorite recording of that as well. he's really an incredible pianist.
You're really making me ashamed that I haven't heard this guy's name at all once before.
No, it's
now I need to go listen to him.
You do some searching and you'll find he has a bit of a cult following, but it's really sad how he sort of has faded from I don't know, the music world's memory, because he was around for so short a time.
The life of a musician, I guess, dying early.
Yeah. And it doesn't help that his recordings aren't super high fidelity. There's a lot of crackle in the background. A lot of them came from like people's recording of old radio broadcasts. So I actually sort of like the sort of throwback of hearing the mix of the other channels, the poorly recorded radio broadcast. I think there's something a little romantic about it. But yeah, wonderful pianist.
Cool. Yeah, I'll have to definitely check him out. I've gotten in the habit, I think, of just really paying attention to the people that are like really major in the scene now.
Yeah.
Because this is just new to me, and so I just like, and I'm probably drawn to the pristine audio quality recordings and
right,
stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of great pianists now. I was just listening to Jeremy Danks' recording of the Ligeti Etudes, that I absolutely love. yeah.
Have you learned all the Chopin Etudes by chance?
Oh, no. Absolutely not.
No. Oh, okay. That's like a life goal of mine.
Yeah, I mean, they're incredible music, both technically and musically. If you learn them all, that's quite an achievement.
Yeah. I'm working through the Aeolian harp right now.
Yeah, that was my first Chopin etude. It's an absolutely beautiful piece.
Yeah. I want to know what you think about like how much rubato you're supposed to use in Chopin music. What has been handed to you, or like how much tempo fluctuation is allowed?
Yeah, so it's totally personal preference. Obviously, every Chopin performer will play it differently. I think, like, if you're going to go by the book, you would say keep the left hand steady, and do whatever you want with the right hand as long as you're together for the first beat of the bar. So that's sort of what I learned. In practice, there's in a piece like the Chopin B minor sonata, where each section, there's so many sections and each one has such a different character. I feel like to do it justice, you need to take a little bit of liberty with a tempo.
Dan said as well, right?
Yeah. The second theme is explicitly marked sostenuto, which would mean to take it a little slower. But even beyond that, I think you need to do a little more. Of course, there's the risk of over sentimentalizing, right?
That's me. Or Langway.
It can very easily be croony almost. And so I had played that first move in the night before, and somebody in the audience had described that the second theme as schmaltzy. And I sort of, I don't know, it was meant to be a compliment, but it's not what I was going for. So I sort of reined it in a little bit the next night.
So you had multiple days of performance.
So I've been learning this piece probably for about 3 months now.
I overheard that a little bit.
And I didn't want to have my first public performance of it be at a master class, because I feel like when you're playing for somebody, I mean, really this holds true when you're playing for any audiences. I feel like these meetup audiences tend to be more casual, but when you're playing for someone like Daniel Glover, who's taking his time to coach young amateur pianists, you really want to put your best foot forward and be prepared. I was lucky that there was another meetup group the night before that I could try the piece out with. And I had played at one of my teacher's smaller workshops, which is even a lower key event, beforehand. So I had a little bit of experience playing the piece before the masterclass. The other thing is, when you play a piece for an audience, it changes the entire thing. Everything goes differently. Different things go wrong that you've never heard before go wrong. Things go right too that you've never played that well, because you get the energy of the audience and you feel their attention and you feel like you can take more time because you have them there, or you feel like you should pull on them a little bit, or they give you the energy to like really go at a bit of music. So everything changes when you're playing for an audience.
What's the name of the Saturday, that meetup that was on Saturday?
It was Bay Area Music Circle.
Oh, okay. I think I'm a part of that. There was also a meetup, I think, for somebody's recital. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, it could be.
On Sunday.
Could be.
Okay, cool. Yeah, thank you. That might be another just like group to be a part of.
Yeah, I think they originally actually, these two meetups started out as the same group and ended up splitting into two groups.
Oh, okay. What do you think about just like getting that social motivation from other people? Like, does that help you a lot? Because that's why I joined the group, was just like, I needed community.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does. I think in every area, not just in classical music, but no matter what, like having a social network and social motivation is really important and really helpful. I think in music especially so, though, because there are pianists that play for themselves, but I think performance is so core to everything in classical music that without performance opportunities, you lose a lot of the experience. And that's why I think in music, it might be even more important than in other areas. A lot of Chopin's music was written as salon music, but to be performed in a small gathering, it wasn't written for the giant concert hall, but it was still written to be performed. And I think you see this throughout classical music. I think the music was written to connect with other people. That's why you play, or that's why I play anyway. I can't imagine playing music without the ability to connect to other people through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you ever busked before?
No, I haven't, because I'd never had an electric keyboard.
Okay.
To bring out and busk.
I have been playing like once a week out front of my Whole Foods, and like, yeah, for that very reason. And also, it's like really good practice for performance. But I actually like the audience does not know classical music, and I can get away with a lot more, and feel like there's much less pressure going on.
If you ever, I don't know why, but if you ever want to see great busking but also have a great classical music performance, go to Aspen over the summer.
Okay.
The Aspen Music Festival is maybe the premier classical music summer event. And the students always just bring their instruments out into the center of town and busk, and it's like really incredible music.
Nice. Is that Colorado, Aspen? Okay, cool. Have you like competed
I have
in
competed.
that or in other? You have.
Not at Aspen. I attended the Aspen Music Festival in school 1 year, but I didn't do the competitions. Honestly, they're sort of out of my league. The person that won the piano competition that year, I think the piece was Rock 2. His name is Tomer Gewurzman, an Israeli pianist, absolutely incredible pianist. Really, I mean, he's worth looking up just to listen to some of his music because I really respect him.
What's his name? How do you spell it?
Tomer is his first name, and his last name is Gewirtzman.
Right, GEW.
IR
Yeah.
TZMAN.
Man. Okay.
So I'm just not at that caliber. I've competed. Most recently, I competed at a great little amateur piano competition in San Diego last year. That was a phenomenal experience. Very nerve-wracking, but phenomenal overall.
What'd you play for that?
So there's three rounds. The first round, so I played a piece by Sofia Gubaidulina, one of her musical toys in each of the three rounds. In the first round, I also played Ravel's Ondine. The second round, I played the first movement of Schubert's A minor sonata, D845. It's known as the big A minor. And Ligeti's Ottoman Warsaw Etude. It's the sixth etude. And then in the final round, I played a few movements from the Bach G major partita. I played the completely unknown Balakirev sonata, the first movement of that, some B flat minor. And then I finished with the Berg sonata.
Dang, you're just naming off repertoire that I have like no co I haven't listened to at all, or that I don't even know. Some of them I don't even know.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of repertoire out there. And I do, personally, I love playing pieces that aren't played all the time, partly because I feel like I can say something new with them. And partly because I feel like there's music that's so good it deserves to be heard. So some of like nobody knows that Balakirev sonata. Ravel Ondine, if you haven't heard it, you should go right after this. You should listen to Olive Gaspard. And then the Schubert sonatas are a whole can of worms. They're incredible pieces. They're very long. There are a lot of them to get to know. I don't know very many of them, but they're wonderful pieces.
Do you have a teacher
I
currently?
do.
Okay. Have you stayed with that same teacher for
Since I've been out of college, I've basically studied with him. I also took to get back into it, I took like a bit of a group class at the San Francisco Conservatory. That was
Oh, wow.
pretty fun. So it's
what?
like, yeah, we do like a lot of piano duo music, and then you also get coaching.
In the class?
Yeah, and then you get a little bit of coaching on a solo repertoire every week as well. And
Nice.
the woman that teaches it is an excellent pianist and teacher.
Was that offered just to the community, or like you enrolled in San
No,
Francisco Conservatory?
anyone can take it. They get people of all levels. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I had no idea. Moderately expensive, I'd imagine, San Francisco Conservatory.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
Relative to the amount of individual instruction you get, it's quite expensive.
Okay. Got it. You said something sort of at the beginning of the interview saying how like you get criticized for playing Bach too romantically, or I forget the other composer that you said. Is that by like your teacher? Or
My teacher actually doesn't mind romanticized Bach. It's more from various adjudicators that I've seen over the years. And I imagine many more listeners, because the way you play your Bach is like a religion to people. Whether or not you pedal, how much you pedal, if you do, whether or not it should be played the way that Bach would have written it to sound in the day, whether it should be played on the modern piano at all, or if it should only be played on the harpsichord and the clavichord.
The classical world is so funny.
Yeah, not even to mention that I'm sure there are people that want it to be played on the tuning system that it was written on too, but nobody does that anymore. A few historical pianists probably, but
Is that like that's just not tempered tuning? That's there's only a couple keys that work well on the piano if it's tuned to have like pure acoustical tuning. Is that right?
honestly, the math is a little beyond me.
Okay.
Right now I'm pretty sure we play with equal temperament,
Yeah.
meaning that every half step is an equal distance apart,
Yeah.
broken up. So each octave, I think, is a 2-to-1 ratio, and then every half step is like 1/12 of that.
Yeah.
Well, temperament, I think, is
I
close,
read
but not
a
quite there. Yeah.
I read a book called The Lies My Music Teacher Taught Me, and like it's written by a singer. The author was just like really, really heated because like the piano screws him up to not get like pure resonance of like his like a cappella groups. But anyway.
Yeah, I remember it because I played cello through high school, and I remember when my teacher told me, like, we're in G major, your F sharp should be a little higher, because it'll lead better into and it, because it's the leading tone and it's the lead into the G. And I was just like, wow, that's a thing. Pitch is malleable. It's not just a fixed thing, and that sort of blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah, you kind of lose that when you only play piano.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't sing like a string instrument or like the voice, obviously. You can't do the vibrato, you can't do the glissandi, you can't do a lot.
yeah. Yeah. Have you watched Your Lie in April by chance, the anime? Are you familiar with what it is or no?
Nope.
It's an anime about a classical pianist.
Yeah.
And most of the repertoire that's featured is Chopin, like couple Chopin etudes like The Winter Wind, Chopin Ballade number 1, the Wrong Note etude, I think it's Opus 10 number 4, and then some other pieces that are that I really enjoyed. But anyway, one of the characters, she's a violinist who gets the main character to start playing piano again. And she's in a competition, and she is, she's actually playing the intro music, Rondo Capriccioso, Introduction to Rondo and Capriccioso. And, she plays it just totally off the book and like adds so much embellishment, and she just doesn't care at all. And like the crowd loves her. Like they love the amount of like heart and uniqueness she brings to it. Mm-hmm. And then she gets off stage, and like the judge is like, that was heresy. So that's just what it made me think of when you talked about like the adjudicators kind of like critiquing you. they call the main character, his name's Kosei. They call him the human metronome because he wins all these competitions just because he plays exactly as it says on the page, with very literal interpretation and, mm-hmm. And that I've kept that anime very close to me. As recitals have come up to me, I rewatched the entire season. Wow. Leading up to it, because there's some really good monologues that help me like really try and fully express what it is that I want, especially since the people that I'm performing for are like our friends and family. Like my most recent recital, like it was just like Napa residents, friends and family, people from my meditation group, and like, but mm-hmm. Like 60 to 70 people showed up, which I was super stoked for. But like really wanting to give these pieces exactly what I wanted to like express them as. I have a really hard time with authority. And so like I just like to do things my way. Luckily I'm not playing for a competition. So I don't have to worry about that as much. That's the frame that I was asking from. It's just like I have a really hard time doing things just because they're supposed to be that way.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a strong conviction about something, you should absolutely play it the way that you think it should be played. You should be able to back up why you want to play it that way. I mean, there are our elders who know far more about the music than we do and can often help us to achieve our vision and our conception of the music better than we can ourselves.
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes my own ego gets in my own way, even though that makes total sense. And like, I know it makes sense, and I know that I don't know everything. Even though sometimes I just get headstrong about it.
Yeah.
Because there are so many different ways that people want you to do it their way.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you talk to five different pianists that all have six different opinions, right? It's a documentary. I forget what it is. I want to say it's about one of the Clyburn competitions, and Veda Kaplinsky, who's one of the judges and also one of the sort of like super celebrity piano pedagogues, is interviewed, and she says something like, we'll go back there and we'll disagree on everything. We'll disagree on phrasing. We'll disagree on tempo. We'll disagree on structure. We'll disagree on everything. Mm-hmm. But the one thing everybody always agrees on is the pianist's tone and their sound quality. So that's an interesting commonality.
As I've gotten more, as I've been teaching more, I've been a little bit more hesitant giving them instructions on expression and just trying to correct what's actually true or like is indisputable. Like, that's an F. Like, there's no question about that. But the more obscure things, I.
Well, there's a fine line because you don't want to say like you don't want to tell them how they should how a passage should make them feel or something like that. But it is important to lead somebody towards how you might phrase something or how you might see the various pieces fitting together or how you might like which part of this is the real meaning of the music. Is it a chromatically descending bass line or is it like a or is it a something else that's going on in the right hand? And there are ways to there are de like there are it's important to somehow bring out the innate like desire to express yourself through the music and to phrase music. And there is to an extent a right and a wrong too in how you phrase the music. So you can't ignore the expression part because you need to encourage it, but you don't want to go too far.
And just admitting to myself too that I know I'm young to this, so like obviously I have a lot to learn.
Well, and teaching is its own art aside from playing the piano.
Dan was talking about how his teacher had never taught before, actually. And so like he had to like the teacher had to learn as he went along because he was just a concert pianist and had never taught before. Which is like mind-boggling to me. Well, my battery's running low. Are you wanting to like wrap up now, or I can grab my charger if you want to keep going?
Up to you.
Maybe we'll wrap up here. Just I haven't eaten dinner yet either, so
All right, sounds good.
but I really appreciate you like making the time to chat, and this was like really enlightening, especially since your breadth of just classical knowledge, or just like especially repertoire, and just being a curator of information is really, really nice.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Hopefully you have some new music to go look up and some food for thought, and happy to chat whenever.
Thank you. All right. Take care, Zach.
All right, you too.
Hi there, this is Eric here. I just wanted to thank you for listening into the Musical Minds podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, as you hear from every other show, if you could please like or subscribe and comment, that really, really helps with our visibility, especially as a new podcast. So I really appreciate it. We really appreciate it. It really does make a difference in being able to have feedback to be able to fine-tune what is resonating with you guys, the listeners. Remember, there are so many musicians out there in the world just wanting to better themselves. You're not alone, even though it can feel really, really lonely sometimes. I can totally understand that. You can find me at ericreinhartpiano.com. That's ericreinehart for recordings and information about Skype piano lessons. Until next time, continue feeding the fire of your musical passions and developing your musical mind. Thank you.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.